Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bucks playing without Godwin, without Watson. Fourth down and five. Brady passes, broken up, incomplete, and the Chicago Bears are going to take over. DeAndre Houston Carson was there for Chicago.
I don't know, Brady. I think the way Brady reacted and hold up his fourth, I think he thought it was third down.
And Brady's still standing out there. But that's fourth down, and it's Chicago's ball. And that's the end of the night, and there may be some confusion out on the field. And Brady's finally being told that's it. You know, he.
So welcome back to another exciting edition of Remember This Crap. If it smells like a rerun, it kind of is. So last week we did this with the Packers. We played some of the best segments from the two Packer podcasts we did last year. And that, the first Packer one, I think is my favorite of Remember This Crap for football that we've done. This one on the Bucks is easily my second favorite. So I think this one's worth watching. I edited it down a little bit more. It's not quite as long, but there's some good stuff. Especially there's a segment about 15 minutes in where we go through some of former Bucks coach John McKay's most famous quotes. The man was genuinely, genuinely funny. And then we talk about great games in Bears Bucks history. There aren't a lot of great ones, but it's pretty fun. So I think it's worth it. Give this one a listen. This is Remember This Crap from last October. Bears and Buccaneers. So one of the things we like to kick around, at least I like to torture you with, because I would not have guessed. Who do you think the all-time leading scorer in Tampa Bay Buccaneer history is?
Is it place kicker Donald Igwebike?
It's not, but now I'm wondering how high he is.
I don't think he's on the list. I
just not to give it away too quickly, but it is a kicker. And he's famous for something very embarrassing.
Well, it's one of that could be two. That pretty much gives you as much insight on the Tampa franchise.
Because be more specific about embarrassing kickers.
Well, the first one I'm thinking of is Martin Gramatica, but it's his brother Bill. I want to say that did something embarrassing, which was celebrate a 28-yard field goal and then pull his ACL
for
in the process.
Giants? Is that who he was kicking for?
I
always thought it was Martin. So I besmirched Martin Gramatica.
Right. It was his damn was brother. Bill.
It was like,
but they were both identical. They had these histrionics when they would kick ordinary field goals of.
Yes.
You know, meager distance.
Yeah, they're not afraid to celebrate. But I apologize to Martin, because that's like blaming Jimmy Carter for Billy Beer.
Well, but that still leaves us with another Tampa kicker, at least, that had a very embarrassing moment, although it was not with the Buccaneers, but the place kicker for Tampa when I first started following in 1979, I believe, would have been Garo Yupremian, who, of course, is better known as throwing an interception somehow. The Cyprus-born Yupremian managed to get a loose snap and some bizarre attempt at throwing a football managed to just knock it up in the air for the only points that Washington scored in Super Bowl VII. But he was the Bucs' place kicker in the late 70s.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you'd not be surprised that Yaro, not the all-time leading scorer, he's 40th.
Yeah, for the Bucs.
Yes, for the Bucs. But there are some...
Did you say it was a kicker, though?
Or yeah, no? Well, I thought I gave it away because I thought it was.
Oh, because it is Gramatica.
It's Martin Gramatica. Yes. Okay. By 90 points over another kicker, Michael Husted. Former Bear Connor Barth is third. And then Mike Allstadt, the first real football player on the list. Donald EBK, sixth. So that's pretty good.
Not bad. Okay. Not bad. I wonder how that rates as far as like a franchise's top eight scores. Is that common, you would think? Maybe more common for teams that, like Tampa, expanded into the league from the late 70s onward? Probably.
You think just if you were bad for a long time, kickers are dominating your scoring. Is that your theory? Yeah. So top 10, Martin Gramatica, Michael Husted, Connor Barth, so all kickers. Mike Allstadt, fullback. Fullback. Well, that's even weird.
Right.
That it's a fullback.
Not even James Wilder.
Right. Then Matt Bryant, kicker. Donald Igwebuike, kicker. Okay. Mike Evans, wide receiver. There's James Wilder.
Wow.
Jimmy Giles. And then Bill Capice.
Don't even know.
Bill Capice will come up later when I'm running through John McKay quotes.
Great.
When he cut Bill Capice, his quote was, "Bill Capice is kaput."
That's a good one to sort of throw out there. It kind of gives us a teaser of the McKay quotes.
Yeah. So you got to stick around. That's it. If you want to get the good stuff, John McKay quotes, you got to bear with us.
The full McKay.
Winningest coach in Tampa history?
It wouldn't be the aforementioned Lehman Bennett. I'm just kidding. He also coached in Tampa.
We got a few duplicates from our Falcons.
It's got to be Dungy, right? Because he was there a long time. I mean, Gruden took him to the Super Bowl after Dungy.
It is not Dungy. It's by three games. He's not. He has the highest winning percentage, but another coach has more wins.
Is it Gruden's?
It's Gruden. Yeah. That was their glory years there. Their two winningest coaches were back-to-back.
Back-to-back.
One of the weird things about Tampa, you'd expect a exhibition or a expansion team that was so famously bad for so long. In their first 32 years, they had seven coaches, which that seems like a lot. But in the last 12 years, they've had five.
Okay,
so they were much more stable in the early days. Some of the luminaries on the list: Lehman Bennett, Ray Perkins.
Oh, that's right.
Richard Williamson. I have no idea who that is.
I remember Richard Williamson. I think he inherited the job after Perkins. Perkins left the New York Giants to succeed Bear Bryant at Alabama, and kind of flamed out there and came crawling back to the NFL for that Tampa job. And then he didn't finish there, and that Richard whatever, Williamson. Yeah, yep. I vaguely remember him.
Perkins got fired 13 games into the 1990 season. God, you think he'd let the guy coach the last three games. Williamson was the offensive coordinator, and he took over for the last three.
That was really deep. Although then he got the
job, and he went 4-15 before he got canned. And then Sam Weich.
Okay. If you don't live in Cleveland.
Then Dungy, Gruden, the great Raheem Morris.
Forgot about
Greg Schiano when the whole team got MRSA.
And he buried a
football. Body parts were falling off, yes. Our buddy, Lovie Smith.
Okay.
Who we were saying right before we came on, was shockingly bad in two seasons there. 8-24. Poor Although Lovie. I think it was really bad year one. Getting better year two, and then because they had drafted Jameis, they wanted the Jameis whisperer. So Dirk Cutter got to be the coach. They canned him after 2 years, and now Bruce Arians is there, and Jameis is not.
I don't even remember the Dirk Cutter era, and that was just the last 2 years.
Yeah. There's not much to remember. 19-29 in three seasons, and now...
Well, the first coach that I remember is McKay, and for Steve Stonevoice, for all you youngsters at home, he was definitely a colorful character. However, he was not liked at all in our household because McKay had before, you know, Tampa was founded in 76, and McKay had come from the University of Southern California, which, as I've mentioned before, grew up in a house that was very, you know, pro Notre Dame football, Bears football. And there's that rivalry between Notre Dame and Southern Cal. There was a game in 74 where Notre Dame had a 24-0 lead. And I think Southern Cal scored right before the half and ended up blowing them out 55-24. It's kind of one of these games that people talked about. It was even referenced. The wrong stuff. Bill Lee, the former major league pitcher who wrote a very funny book in the early 80s when he burned every bridge he could in walking out of the Montreal Expos office of general manager John McHale, who was a Notre Damer. And even in that point, Lee referenced that game from 8 years earlier about McHale was still sore about what Southern Cal did. So not huge fans of McKay, even though he objectively had a very good personality. But one of my earliest memories was, as bad as they were in 76 and 77 when they came in the league, McKay was their coach, and we're going to get to some of the funny shit he said. But even by expansion team standards, they were awful. They went winless the first year. I think they lost the first 9-10 games the next year, and I'm pretty sure that's still an NFL record. But just as sort of astonishingly, within 2 years after that, just when I came along, they were playing for a trip to the Super Bowl, and that was in 79 when the Bears kind of had one of those one-offs and happened to be the first year that I was watching when they did make the playoffs. But early in the year, they were facing a suddenly competent Tampa team, and they did have Leroy Selman, who I want to say was eventually a Hall of Famer on defense. And it was a tight game at Soldier Field, and the Bears lost. And I just remember my dad yelling at the TV screen as they showed John McKay. You know, now there's about a decade of pain associated with them. That you sleep in your underwear, McKay, which I still don't know. I still don't know what the hell that means.
Yeah, a great non sequitur. You sleep in your underwear.
It's some sort of a generational insult from people that were born during the Depression. But he was frothing mad. It was not a nicety to tell someone that, even though I thought we all slept in our underwear.
So go ahead. Yeah, the Bucks famously lost their first 26 games. They were 0-14 their first year, and then they lost their first 12 the next season. Do you know who the last team that beat them in the losing streak was?
The last team that I always thought the
26th straight loss. Who was that team?
Okay. Then if it's I have no idea. I always thought, and I could be wrong here, that the team that they beat to end the streak was the Bears.
That is not correct.
But the Bears were the last team to beat them.
Yes. The Bears were the last team with the 26th in a row. They then beat the Saints the next week, which makes sense because the Saints were dog shit at the time. So you're right. And so in 79, they play for the NFC championship game. They play for the NFC championship and they lose
9-0
to Vince Ferragamo.
Yes.
And the Rams. And otherwise they would have completely screwed up. Heaven Can Wait, because, Warren Beatty would either had to have, I'm sure he would have just been the Steelers quarterback. Doesn't make any sense. He's got to be in California. So, The fix was probably in.
It was all a coincidence, more arrestingly, because of the fact that the movie came out the year the Rams went to the Super Bowl, right?
That's right. And there's the game. The big game is footage from the Super Bowl. I'm sure they would have just used a different game.
Right. Okay. But they had that. Sort of handed to them.
Yeah.
That opportunity.
But some of the weird things about – maybe it just shows how football has changed in the last – what is that now?
31 years. Since 76?
41 years? 41 years since 79. Yeah. Doug Williams was the quarterback for Tampa. He completed 41% of his passes. He threw 18 touchdowns and 24 picks. And that was a guy that was – I'm sure he got MVP votes. I remember, it just is kind of a rule of thumb. You made fun of if they completed less than 50% of their passes. That was kind of the Terry Bradshaw. Well, he's good. He completes just over half his passes. Now, if you don't complete 70%, they just think dog shit. Or you're Mitch.
Is that where we're at now? 70? Because I do remember 50 was the
Mitch was 56, and it was it was terrible. So.
Yeah.
So obviously they did a lot of damage on the ground. Ricky Bell ran for 1,200 yards.
Okay.
Jerry Eckwood ran for 690 and Johnny Davis for 221. But they were a defensive team. They had Leroy Selman.
Selman for sure, yeah.
And
you mentioned Jimmy Giles, so he was a tight end, so he must have been a premier tight end. All I remember is that the subsequent season in 1980, they played on a Monday night game in Soldier Field. Jimmy Giles was one of the victims of a Doug Plank missile, I guess. And in fact, I would be willing to wager that if you YouTube that or Google that, you'd find some footage of Doug Plank basically almost just ending Jimmy Giles' life.
They also had, and this is probably why they were so good in 79. They had either a wide receiver or a tight end. It doesn't say, but I'm guessing it was tight end. Makes sense. They had Jim Obradovich.
Whoa. I'm pretty sure that had to be Obradovich. It had to be a relation, right? I don't recall.
Well, how many Obradoviches could there be?
I mean, how do you come up with that name anyway? I'm Irish, right? And like I like to think I can identify Irish names, and usually you can assume if there's an O apostrophe. But then you have like this sort of Slavic.
Yeah, the Vich part. That doesn't fit.
Bradovich, this trisyllabic.
Where did Ed go to school? I guess I could look this up.
God, I wish I knew that. I don't know.
This Obradovich went to USC, which makes sense because.
Well, and if this one maybe grew Jim up McKay, around Chicago.
John McKay just signed all of his old. I'm going to guess. Yes. OB went to.
OB was actually born in Melrose.
Did he go to Illinois?
Yes, he did. Nice call. Yeah, I didn't know. I wasn't aware that Obradovich actually was a Chicago guy. It makes sense. He's born in Melrose Park. I do remember eating at his restaurant like in 1980. It's the first time I ever heard of Ed Obradovich.
Like, what did they just? Family. They just put like raw meat out in the middle of the table and grabbed a handful.
It was like a nice restaurant that we were not really accustomed to. It was relatives of my parents that were taking them. My dad had done like my cousin's taxes or something, and I remember like. It was nice for our taste. I might not be saying a lot, but
it didn't have a pool, did it?
I don't recall.
Shouldn't go there. That's bad.
I'll leave it.
Okay, so we're talking about Jim McKay. John McKay.
John McKay. They're all gone.
Yeah, he was either doing the Olympics on ABC or he's coaching USC in Tampa. So one of the things he's most well known for, and yes, he was also a scourge in our household because my dad is a huge Notre Dame fan.
Mm-hmm.
But he was undeniably, he wasn't just funny. He was a smartass.
Acerbic.
Yes. And he, at some point in his life, probably relatively early, just decided that he wasn't going to take any sports writer question seriously. Which is a great way to do it if you can get away with it. And he could because he'd won so many games at USC and they paid him so at the relative to the time, they paid him so much for at Tampa, which is he admitted it was the whole reason he went. It was basically Dusty managing the Cubs to pay off his income tax, his back taxes. This was John going to Tampa to coach an expansion football team. So the quote I think he's most famous for is during the losing streak, a reporter asked about his team's execution, and his answer was, "I'm in favor of it."
Just classic. Yeah, just brilliant. I've had to appreciate McKay and kind of get away from the biases that we had because that's just a brilliant line.
One of his other ones, which I believe is on, there's a one of the NFL films, Football Follies, just has like 5 minutes of him. Saying funny stuff. And one of them was, we can't win at home and we can't win on the road. I've petitioned the NFL to play all neutral site games, but I don't think they're going to go for it. I like that. He said during his first year, he said, we've broken down the expansion teams and they've averaged winning 2.7 games their first year, which to me is rather difficult. I figured out the two, but the 0.7 has got me wondering what the hell is going on. He once said, we didn't tackle well today, but we made up for it by not blocking, which is. I think this is a sound strategy. He was asked literally about his team's blocking strategy, and he said, hold when you're at home and don't hold when you're on the road.
I like that. No, pretty sage advice.
He said, emotion is highly overrated in football. My wife, Corky, is emotional as hell, but can't play football worth a damn.
Problematic.
Yes, he couldn't get away with that now. Now, I have made a version of this joke. Where did I put it? I may have...
Is it a McKay original, or was he also being reductive?
Well, I don't know. Okay. I think he may have come up with this. It was during that first season, and they asked him, it must have been early on in the season, they asked him for the team's outlook, and he said, we're only 3 or 4 plane crashes away from the playoffs. Which is just tremendous.
That's great. And just
I've made that joke about the Cubs probably.
Yeah, times. No, I know you have, and it's always gotten a laugh out of me. Funny that he that's another one that actually just for sensitivity reasons would be problematic.
See, right. He would
say that today. Half his quotes would get his ass fired today.
If you have experience back from a team that lost 10 games, the experience isn't too important. That's not
that's true.
Kickers are like horse manure. They're all over the place. He was, for some reason, asked to compare coaching an expansion team to a religious experience. And he said, you do a lot of praying, but most of the time the answer is no.
That's good.
He's talking about the special teams, and he said they were absolutely horrible, and that's the best thing I can say. Besides that they were bad, these people are not poorly paid, you know. So I kind of like that.
Wow. It's pretty all-encompassing.
We down to the. I think we have one more here. Oh, there's two more. When he heard that one of the kickers during training camp, a guy named Pete Rejecki, had said he was nervous kicking in front of his coach, McKay told the press, tell Mr. Rejecki that I plan to attend all the games. And my third favorite quote of all time. He once said, if a contest had 97 prizes, the 98th would be a trip to Green Bay.
How could you not like him a little
bit? That's basically
that one.
The first prize is 2 tickets, and second prize is 4.
Exactly. That's pretty clever. Dead or alive, John McKay?
Oh, dead.
Is he?
He was old then.
He was. Yeah. Silver Fox. You're right, because, I mean, you know, he's got a coaching career that probably goes back to the 40s. I mean, those Southern Cal teams were, he was there. I mean, he coached OJ, I'm assuming. I mean, he had to have been there a while.
Recently dead, if recently is 19 years ago.
Quite a while. And I got confused because he's not related to the Rams coach, but the Rams coach also has a dad that supposedly football people know.
That's McVay. Yeah.
Well,
the letter, the different letter in the name probably.
That tends to be a bit of a differentiator.
Yeah. He was.
Never mind.
So McKay was a head coach only 2 places in his entire career, USC and the Bucks.
That's incredible.
And he really didn't have much of a. He was an assistant coach at Oregon for 8 years, then at USC for 1, then he was their coach for 16 seasons. He won 127 games, 4 national championships, 9 conference titles.
4 national championships. That's Saban-esque.
In the NFL, he was 44-88-1, but that includes 2 division championships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's pretty good when you start only 26.
Right. Yeah. And that's what brings me back to 79. I think I wasn't really, when I started watching, I was not aware of their recent awful, laughable history. I think it was more confounding to the older people around, where all of a sudden they went from being a laughing stock, like I said, to being on the verge of the Super Bowl. But the funny thing is, then they were tough 79, 80, 81, 82. And then just as quickly, they went back to sucking around 84. And then it was 10 years. And that kind of brings us to your point where, very rarely if both teams played each other while they were, had winning records. I mean, that's without you looking it up, but I can vouch for that because each team has had very long stretches of being bad.
Yes.
When they were good under Gruden and whatnot, the Bears maybe in 01 matched them and they would have faced them that year because that would have been the last year they were division rivals. Bears beat them twice that year, actually. But usually didn't face each other, and they're both good.
One of the things I remembered inexplicably, I gotta find the game here. It's great when I do this. Yeah, so it was the opener in 85.
I was there. James Wilder went nuts in the first. Yeah. The Bears defense actually allowed 28 first-half points in that game.
Yeah, and that was all they allowed. But yes, they scored 28 points. The only team that scored more points against the Bears that year was...
the other team from Florida?
Right, yeah. And that, we'd like to pretend that didn't happen, but it did.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of weird, but the Bears offense, and that's what made the Bears next level, was the healthy McMahon and McKinnon and Gault and whatnot, because they just... The Bears gave 28 points, but I don't know what the score at halftime was, but it wasn't like Tampa was beating their ass. It was just a high-scoring first half.
28-17 at the half.
Yeah, yeah. And then 45-28 was the final?
38.
Hot that day.
38-28.
Okay.
Yeah, they shut them down in the second half.
Yeah. Wow, that is funny. They weren't that good by 85, but Wilder was a good running back.
Maybe it was, you know. It was hot. Maybe that was it. It was 81.
It was hot.
81 degrees, 79% humidity.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears covered, and the over hit for one of the probably the.
Well, right. Jimmy the Greek was happy that day in the studio after the game.
You know, Brent, I think there's going to be more higher scoring than people think. Wink, wink, wink. Although, actually, I'm trying to think what year it was. Early on with Jimmy the Greek, they just put the point spreads right up on his board. And then at some point, he had to start like talking in code.
That's how I learned what point spreads were when watching the NFL
him
today.
And Pete Axthelm. Pete Axthelm always had the spread.
On NBC,
too.
Right? Pete Axthelm was always a little bit of like a Jimmy the Greek, poor man's Jimmy the Greek. I mean, he had his own career and was known in those circles, but Jimmy the Greek was really the guy. But you're right, Pete Axthelm on NBC, right. He did the same role. And that, but I remember like watching the pregame and asking my dad, "What does that number mean?" And then learning the intricacies of point spreads.
Yeah, so then at some point, the NFL leaned on both networks. And so then you got Jimmy would say stuff like, I think the game's going to be closer than the experts think. He basically taught Brent everything he learned about how to sneak it into the broadcast without saying it.
I never drew that connection because I know Musburger is not only covertly into that in his broadcast, but he's a very much proponent. I think he's got a stake in a lot of these enterprises,
well,
right?
He's the... I don't know if he's the owner, but he's one of the major owners of VSiN, which is the Vegas Sports and Information Network.
Yeah, on XM. Would that be Friends in the Desert?
Yes, and he does My Guys in the Desert. That's Brent's
My
show.
My Guys in the Desert, that's it.
And the morning show is on Marquee.
Oh, that's right. I think I heard that. I don't have Marquee, but okay.
Yeah, you're not missing anything.
I know I'm not. But I didn't draw the connection that all that studio time, I side with one James Snyder.
Yeah, and I think
AKA the Greek.
I think we should have Brent on the podcast. I'm sure he'll come on.
That'd be great.
Actually, he probably would. I think if
he spent time in Chicago,
I think Brent is available. His brother Todd still lives in Chicago.
The agent for Phil Jackson,
yes.
Right?
That's right. I'm pretty sure Brent started throwing in the little things as like a kind of a tribute to Jimmy.
Interesting.
In the ABC game. Although I still don't know where, you know, one of Brent's most famous ones was, it had to be a national title game. It was in the Fiesta Bowl, and one team was lining up for the winning kick, and Brent said, "This one's for all the Tostitos." Okay, Brent, maybe might be time to put the act away. But he's the Brent is in his 80s now, I think.
He should, yeah.
He's the radio announcer for the Raiders.
Wow.
And has been for the last few years. He took the job, I think maybe the last two years they were in Oakland, knowing they were moving to Vegas, and he lives in Vegas. So he would fly to Oakland and do the games.
I've always found it interesting where like nationally recognizable broadcast on-air talent would also have like a permanent gig, like Dick Enberg with California Angels.
Yeah, Dick's last job was the Padres. I mean, he did that for years before he went toes up.
Yeah, and the other one escapes me, but it jumped to mind. But it's funny. Oh, Don Criqui doing Notre Dame football. Of course, Don Criqui kind of faded off the scene anyway. But
who did he say had white man's disease?
Oh,
do you remember
I don't
that?
Recall.
Oh
no.
Yeah, that was a. It was a. It was. It was.
Was, he can-
it,
was he, it, Don Criqui canceled? Is that what you're saying?
Not quite, but it basically it. it basically meant he was never going to be the number one guy on NBC.
And he never was. Like, we all knew who he was in the 80s.
Yeah, in fact, one of my favorite announcing teams of NFL announcing teams of all time was Don Kroenke and Bob Trumpy.
Bob Trumpy.
For whatever
right.
reason, I always really liked those two.
So they were the number two behind Enberg and Merlin Olsen,
yes.
right?
Yep. It may have been I'm pretty sure it was a college basketball game. And my dad remembered it because he thought it was so funny, which is a window into my dad. But, a guy got out jumped for a rebound, and Don said that he suffered from white man's disease. And even then, they were like, no, Don, you can't.
See, I don't remember that, but it would have been – all right, was that the – are you saying that's the thing that would have prevented him from being the number one guy? Or maybe
I know what was famous about him. It obviously wasn't enough for NBC to fire him.
You know, me to really remember that, which I can't believe I don't remember that.
But he was good. And maybe it was just the fact that Enberg was there and he was never going to get that job anyway.
He had that classic broadcaster voice.
Yeah.
You talked before about the excitement of the rare instances when the Bears were on NBC and if it was maybe the color.
Yeah.
But like Don Kroenke's voice was kind of one of those elements where, it felt like a big game. So it's funny. That we can, we're both members of the Don Kroenke Appreciation Club. Now,
it wasn't always great. Do you remember? I don't remember what year this would have been. It would have been, I'm sure, just post Super Bowl. But Charlie Jones did a Bears Steelers game, and
the one that got Otis Wilson suspended.
And Otis Wilson took out Lewis Lips.
Mm-hmm.
And it pissed. And Charlie Jones went on and on about what a dirty play it was, and he got suspended. And that's when Ditka said he goes, well, clearly Charlie Jones is the most powerful man in the NFL.
Yeah, so. yeah, that was ridiculous. I can still see it.
Lewis Lips.
Lewis Lips sinks ships. That was one of the NBC promos that they used early in his career.
Okay, so the only other Bucks thing I wanted to talk about was. It always amused me that, it looked like, I don't know, I should look at it, whatever year it was, when they got the number one pick and they got Vinny Testaverde, it looked like, all right, because he was a great college quarterback. And
was this, was that 85? Did they also draft Bo Jackson then the next year?
Oh, that's a good question.
So I sorry to interrupt that because I want to get back on it, but they were so bad that I believe they had consecutive number one picks. Maybe Testaverde wasn't a number one pick.
Oh yeah, Vinny was number one overall in 1987.
87. Jackson was 86.
He was as big a pick as you could get at the time. Well, let's look and see when Bo got picked before I get to mine.
I thought Bo was originally the first pick in the draft. Didn't pull Tampa to go take a hike. I might be wrong. If so, I really apologize.
Bo's first year. Bo was the first pick. Yep, the year before, in 86, which is why they got, by the Bucks. Never signed. And then ended up the very next year. I wonder if was he a supplemental draft pick? You think the Raiders
think
got
so.
Him? Raiders got him in the seventh round. He must have just gone back in the draft.
That's right. Well, I think he'd signed with the Royals, and they didn't know how serious he was.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
But the thing about Vinny that always amused me was Vinny's colorblind, and one of the big problems he had with Tampa was their home uniforms. Were the light orange, I don't even know what they call that color.
Creamsicle.
And whenever, obviously when they wore that was their dark jersey. So whenever they wore that jersey, and they wore it, especially once teams found out that this was the deal, some teams would make them wear it on the road, Vinny couldn't tell the difference between that and white.
So, seems like a problem.
Yes. So there's your quarterback who can't tell which team is which. That was great.
Would account for the, 33 interceptions he had?
Yeah, because he was only any good once he left.
Well, at the end of his career, he managed that.
Yeah, it took
hang in
20 years or whatever before he finally became a productive quarterback.
Yeah.
But
1998 with the Jets.
It really seemed like at some point you might have, I don't know, maybe let's try a darker uniform for the guy that we're paying all this money.
How did he even come to that? It's just, how did he even succeed at Miami? Is it strictly the combination of
Well,
his,
I, Yeah, probably.
And that unusual color scheme that...
Or it's the fact that in college, especially when you're on a good team, dudes are wide open, and it becomes pretty obvious which one's which. And then you get to the NFL, and everything's moving 100 miles an hour, and you're like, that's my guy. Oh, shit, it's not.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, Vinny was going to throw picks even when he could see the colors, but it didn't help.
Yeah, 47 picks in 88 and 89 combined.
So Vinny had, I was like this too. So Vinny had a wardrobe consultant pair all of his clothes together for him. And it's like they would put ensembles together in his closet because he couldn't tell what color was which.
You can't go out looking like that.
And another famous quarterback had his mother do that for him. Do you know who it was?
Mitch, right? No, wait, say that again. So a Bears...
No, not a Bear. Just a famous NFL quarterback had his mom actually made, like... You remember Garanimals?
I do.
So if...
Garanimals.
You could pair the clothes match based on an animal. So like the shirt had like a monkey on it, and so did the shorts, and that was a combination. Well, this quarterback's mom went through his closet and basically color coded things so that he knew what matched with what. So like she'd put all the shirts that could go with a certain pair of pants, she'd put like a color on the hanger, and then he just had to match the colors on the hanger.
Wasn't because he was colorblind.
No,
it was because he
didn't know how to dress himself. So who do you think that quarterback was?
I don't know, but I want to know. Just tell me.
That quarterback is Peyton Manning.
Oh, that's...
And apparently it started with, at the first, maybe even the first game he played, he wore basically a Canadian tuxedo. He wore the jean jacket, a blue jean shirt, and jeans, and his mom was so embarrassed by it that she went into his closet and basically idiot-proofed his clothes.
Wow.
So, yes. I always love that story.
That's something.
All right, so not only, it's not just the Bucks who the Bears are playing. The Bears are, I don't know if people out there know this, because it didn't get much attention. Apparently Tom Brady is the quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now. I don't know how we missed this.
What?
Yes, apparently he is signed with Tampa. It sounds like he's living in Derek Jeter's house, maybe. Him and Giselle renting that for a year. And that he, in the middle of the pandemic, he just wandered into somebody else's house. He thought he was going to, I think it was, maybe it was Bruce Arians, maybe it was one of the wide receivers. He was going to somebody's house to have a meeting, a face-to-face that he wasn't supposed to because of COVID. And he just walked into the house. And somebody looked up, and there's Tom Brady standing in their house. And it was not the right house, but he's Tom Brady. He's handsome and charming, and they thought it was hilarious, and he left. If it had been Mitch, probably would have got shot. So it was a good thing. Good thing it was Tom Brady and not him. But yes, and this could be the very last time the Bears, because they're not going to play Tampa every year, maybe in the Super Bowl next year. Well, I guess not the Super Bowl. In the NFC title game next year, they're probably playing.
That's right.
But this could be the last time Bear fans get to see Tom Brady.
I thought so too until I looked up and saw that Brady's already thrown for 1,100 yards, 11 touchdowns, 4 picks. Christ almighty.
Well, he threw five of those touchdowns 3 days ago.
Still, that's two a game.
To five different guys. So he's tuned up just in time for the Bears.
Yeah. So as it turns out, and this will come as a shock to no one that's been conscious for the last 20 years, it's still frustrating, but the Bears have never beaten Tom Brady. It kind of reminds me of the Cubs and Randy Johnson, whom they never beat. It came close a couple times, bullpen blew a few games, you know, going all the way back to 89 when Johnson, before he was even traded in the Mark Langston deal at the deadline, was called up and beat the Cubs as an expo, and then never lost to him. Granted, he was in the American League, you know, for Seattle, but, you know, he pitched a long time. Similarly, the Bears have never beaten that son of a bitch, and he's had a long career. Each game, I think anybody listening that's a Bears fan will probably have like one indelible moment probably from each and every one of these games. The funny thing is, the first one was probably the closest the Bears came to beating him. I have to insert myself into the story to tell you not only that I went to this game, but I went with my dad and we drove the 190 miles to Champaign in 2002 because the Bears, of course, were renovating Soldier Field and were playing their games at U of I Stadium. 2002 was the year after the Bears had went 13-3 and made the playoffs. It was also the year after Brady won his first Super Bowl. And this game, I don't remember a whole lot about it. I just remember that the Bears had it in the bag down the stretch. And on fourth, I don't know if it was fourth down or third down. Or I have to look this up because I might be a little bit off here, and that's fine. Quick side note, last week, T.J. Brown had pointed out that Mike Ditka did not break his hand punching a bench in Baltimore but hit a locker, so I wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, and I knew that. And I don't know why.
I don't know why I always thought it was a bench, but locker makes more sense. And also, the here's your IQ buddy actually came after the Super Bowl, so I appreciate any edification. I'm fallible, and I might be fallible here, but what happened, it's one or the other, because I remembered it as one thing, and then I thought maybe something else. But they had – the Bears had the lead, end of the game, less than 2 minutes. I thought it was fourth down, but Brady kind of got intercepted by Brian Robinson. What I thought would happen was Robinson caught the ball, tried to run, fumbled it, and New England recovered, getting a fresh set of downs. But I think what really was, Robinson would have just, if he just sort of pulled the ball in and fallen down for the interception instead of trying to run with it while he was trying to catch it and put it on the ground, the game was basically over there. So Brady got picked off.
So it was incomplete, not a fumble, but the same, the same effect, because New England got the ball back in the same spot, pretty much.
Except if it was a fumble, it would have been a change of possession and a fresh set of downs.
That's true.
That's how I remembered it, but it might not. It's one of those two things. I just remember how ridiculously close the Bears were just to finishing this game off. And, of course, given a new life, even though it was early in his career, but, you know, his one Super Bowl as a 23-year-old the year before was a come-from-behind effort. Against the Rams. And so, given a second chance, he finds Troy Brown in the corner of the end zone to tie it, you know, right as the clock winds down. They win it in overtime. And just to punctuate, you know, you drive all the way fucking down to Champaign in like late November. Yeah. It's dark out. The Bears the game away. Then what do we have to do? We get to get in our car and drive 190 miles in the dark back home to Chicago. The next time they faced the Bears, faced the Patriots was the year the Bears went to the Super Bowl. And I'm going to turn this around, Andy, and tell you, what is there one particular play? Do you have any particular memories about the year that the Bears played in New England in early December? Bears were legitimately good, unlike, you know, the 01 or 2010 team where they kind of, you know, got some breaks and made the playoffs. It was their second straight playoff appearance. They go into New England in early December. It was a close game. What I remember about the indelible moment there is that the Bears were trailing, but they were in the game still in the fourth quarter, maybe 5-6 minutes. Some of these specifics might be off. And they flushed Brady out of the pocket on third down.
Oh, God. Yes.
And?
He is that when he either broke a tackle or juked Brian Urlacher.
He faked Urlacher clean out of his jockstrap and got that son of – and Urlacher was kind of in his prime still. But managed
Super Bowl
to get –
Urlacher was still a a beast.
He wasn't, you know, 02, maybe 03, 04 Urlacher. He was still, you know, maybe on the downside of his prime, whatever. Brady was, you know – Brady. They're about the same age. They're both in the 2000 draft, so they were total contemporaries. So it wasn't, you know, it was no shame in it. It was just frustrating that a son of a bitch managed to dodge getting dragged down.
Brady's one of the slowest quarterbacks ever. He was never fast, even when now he's 42 or whatever, but he was never fast. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. That's probably why his game hasn't leveled off so much, because he never did rely so
still,
much on his
athletically,
on his
he's basically the same.
So after 2006, the Bears faced them the next time in 2010, another year in which the Bears went to the playoffs. So it seemed like the first three times the Bears played them, they were almost like a good team. That 02 team was not good, but they were a year removed from the playoffs. In 2010, I went to this game too. We get like a foot of snow, early December, gets a shitload of snow. Make it down to the game. You know, here, you know, what kind of game is this going to be? Of course, the Bears don't do a damn thing. Brady throws for 350 yards, two touchdowns. The Patriots paced the Bears 36-7, I think, was the score. 2014, what stands out is the nadir of the Mark Trestman era. I think this was the game before the bye or after the bye. Because, like, Trestman's, as if there was any doubt, it was extinguished in this 3-week period where going into the bye, the Bears lose like 88-0, and then come out of the bye and get crushed. And I think it was New England before the bye, Green Bay after.
Yeah, I know it was. Both games were in the 40s.
Yeah, and with a bye in between.
And I think the thing about that one was New England changed the turf the week before the game.
Is this somehow going to defend?
No. Actually, it's an indictment of the Bears. I don't know if they were still. I guess they just had a grass field and it was shit. And they're like, "Fuck it, we're going to put field turf in, and we're not waiting until next year. We're going to do it right now." And so they've had a week off. They put the new field turf in, and they played a game on it where the Bears for years played on the worst surface in the world. And also, we can't put turf in. It's football's meant to be played in grass.
Right.
It's like,
then
grow some. If you don't know how to grow it, you can't do
right.
it.
Right.
Then their excuse for a long time was, we can never host a World Cup game unless we have real grass.
Heaven forbid.
So you already hosted some World Cup games. It's never
94.
Coming back. Yeah, you're fine. Then it was, the seasons would get bad, and they're like, this is like a 6-month project. It's like, the Pats just did it in a fucking week.
Yeah.
So,
and even if it was a 6-month project, who cares? That place didn't even being used six months out
of the year.
So
now they got to share it with the fire. So there's no way they could possibly ever put grass in. But I remember that. So is the next one?
Well, 14, just the memorable part was where Brady or Garoppolo, I think Garoppolo may have even come into the game in the first half, gets sacked when Lamar Houston does a celebratory dance when they're down 5 touchdowns and blows out his knee.
That's right.
That's what stands out in that game. And then 2018 was actually akin to the 2002 game. It wasn't a nut punch, but it was actually the only other – well, not the only other, but it was a competitive game. Mitch actually wasn't horrible, close score, but they still lost.
Well, it's the game that ended with Kevin White on the one. He caught the
– oh, that's right.
He caught the Hail Mary at the one. That would have only tied the game. But had the Bears won that game, they would have had a bye, and they would not – Cody Parkey could probably still show his face because they would not have had to play the Eagles in the first round. They would have had a bye, and they would have started in the second round where they probably would have played like the Eagles. And it probably the same damn thing probably would have happened anyway. But they would have been one game closer to the Super Bowl, but they needed one more win. And the most obvious one was the one where they were 3 feet shy of tying the Pats. They probably still would have lost in overtime, but at least.
And that was like a game that, even in spite of them hanging in, it didn't really feel like they were going to win.
That was
a
game that you felt like they were out
of. They had no other games that year where they may have pissed away that would make you regret it.
I don't know about that, but I mean, this one was literally on the very last play of the game.
No, right.
He's so close. And it summed up Kevin White.
Well, of course.
Because it was a nice,
came up short.
It was a super athletic play to go up and get it, but he's a yard short.
Yeah.
Day late, a dollar short.
And so, Brady walks off the Soldier Field turf, and there's all of a sudden, 46-year-old Huey shouting, "You sleep in your underwear, Brady!" Just to honor the insult that my dad hurled at John McKay. But that's how I feel about Brady. I respect him. But it kills me that the Bears have never beaten him, just like it killed me that the Cubs never beat Randy Johnson a single time.
So it feels to me, I didn't look this up, because why would I want to actually do that? I was too busy reading John McKay quotes.
Right.
To me like we know Mike Pusteri and I talk about this. I talk about it more than he wants to, I think, on the Bear podcast about the saving grace for Nagy is that he's excellent in the division. He has never lost to the Lions. He's never lost to the Vikings. He's only 1-3 against the Packers, but I mean, they've done worse than that.
The Bears have swept the Vikings the last 2 years?
Yes. Mike Zimmer has never beaten Matt Nagy.
Granted, the
last time they played, the Vikings didn't try to win.
Mm.
Their playoff position was in, but he's 4-0 against Zimmer. He's 4-0 against the great Matt, 5-0 now against the great Matt Patricia. And he's 1-3 against the Packers. It feels to me like he's also good in the dark.
At night?
Yes.
The opener last season
notwithstanding. Actually, no. Maybe not. Maybe dark at home. That was a terrible game. And, of course, they played well in this very first game ever. That was a night game at Green Bay. It was a Sunday night game where they blew the – Aaron Rodgers miraculously wandered back out on the field. The Bears blew the lead.
Yep.
Maybe it's all clouded in two games.
Rams?
No, they're bad at night. Now that I think about it, maybe not at home.
The night game
against the Rams last year was a debacle.
Yeah, but 2 years ago, when they went to the playoffs, they had some games flexed tonight, and I feel like they performed well. But
maybe the one is that it's loaded up for next season. The one that they just destroyed the Cowboys last year. That was Thursday night, or was that?
That was a Thursday night game.
Yes. So it feels like they've got a shot, just because apparently whatever Nagy's, whatever that stuff is.
Sure.
If that's only what we're at home on Thursday nights.
Is that what we're hanging our
head
on?
So we get that. If we can get some playoff games at home on Thursday nights.
Doesn't matter that there's going to be an empty stadium tomorrow. It'll still be by the lakeshore.
I have, I'm not terribly optimistic.
No?
No. We also talked about, the other thing that worries me is anytime Bruce Arians gets to come back, he just has to take it out
on the McCaskies.
For completely screwing him over.
Right. That predates Ryan Pace. That's the Mark Trestman hire, right?
Yes. That was Phil Emery.
Yeah.
The whole idea that he narrowed it down to two guys, both of them with coaching Jay Cutler in mind. That was the number one thing you had to do was get the most out of Jay. And Arians left his interview thinking, I got this job. He told his wife, we're going to Chicago. I think I can win with this team. It's going to be fun. And then they hired Mark Trestman, and Arians is rightly still pissed, just like the fans are.
Well, Trestman did get good production out of the quarterback. We discussed this, that it was – and he had faults as a head coach. I don't know that – I mean, remember, the Bears – that's the only Bears team where the shitty defense – sabotaged.
But I mean, if you remember Bruce was the coach of the year.
Right, as a current
Bear defense coordinator Chuck Pagano had leukemia. Arians takes over. He's the freaking coach of the year.
So the Bears, instead of hiring Arians, are like, no, we're gonna hire the guy that got cancer and then sort of bottomed out instead of you. why get a guy on the rise when we can get a guy in the bottom?
Well, I think, honestly, unless Trestman wore a hat to the interview, I don't know how you hire him. I mean, you got to look at that hairline, and you're just like, okay, I know enough to know this isn't going to work.
Yeah. In retrospect, it's obvious. I didn't know if it was such a horrible hire at the time, to be honest with you. He was an offensive guy, and he did get – remember, threw McCown in there that first year, and they were still putting up points and yardage. He was just a clown, though. I don't know. Is Arians a good head coach? I mean, he had success in Arizona, and he's doing well with Tampa.
I don't know. He's fun.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, so that's where we're gonna end it. We talked a little bit more about Bruce Arians and the Bucks, but it was from last year where they were 3-1 before they gained the Bears would be, and they go 3-2, and we didn't know that much about how good they were going to be. Had no clue they were going to go on to win the Super Bowl. Especially, you would think if you lose to Matt Nagy, it would make you ineligible for the playoffs or a Super Bowl. But apparently it doesn't. So coming up next week, the Bears play the 49ers, and we're going to have there'll be some fresh crap for that one. The Bears and Niners do have a rich history. That one will be fun. And then that, I believe, is followed up by the Steelers. And so we'll also, basically, anytime the Bears play somebody that they didn't play last year, you're going to get fresh crap. And we've got some stuff planned for what we're going to do when they play this division opponents the second time, since I've kind of used all the reruns. We'll just have to come up with something new. So thanks for hanging in there and listening to this one. And we'll see you with some new crap next week.
Many of us have herpes.